Hope you're enjoying your Thursday. As always, we appreciate you hanging out with us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Suns beat the Rockets last night. And DeAndre Ayton was the show, obviously. 26 points, 17 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 blocks, which was a career high.
5 blocks.
Woo! 11 of 15 shooting. He was engaged. He was in the paint. He wasn't settling for a bunch of jump shots. He was dunking the ball. He was doing it like a man. It was great. But that doesn't mean that everything was great last night. And moments after the Suns beat the Rockets 109-103, Chris Paul goes on Fox Sports Arizona with K-Ray, voice of the Phoenix Suns, on the TV side. And K-Ray just kind of, and nothing K-Ray did wrong, just kind of gave him a little, hey, nice win. You got to be real happy about how things went. And Chris Paul was like, no, I'm not really happy about any of this at all.
You know, we're supposed to win, but I still don't love the way we finish games. It just don't feel good.
And I love it.
It was great. It was classic. And listen, this is what Chris Paul's here for. Don't be satisfied because you just beat the Houston Rockets. Hey, we're supposed to beat them. They're no good. They're not a good basketball team. Like, we're supposed to beat them. I don't like the way we finished. And he should not be happy. They should not be happy with the way they finished that game. Remember, they were up 101-86. They had a 15-point lead, 101-86. The next thing you know, 15-2 run by Houston. And it's a two-point game. Should have never came down to those last couple of minutes. You're up by 15, bury them. Step on their throats. Get this game over with. So Chris Paul, the grown-up in the room, you know, understands that's not acceptable. You can't allow that team to come back and make you have to fight for that victory because you're not always going to be able to pull those games out. I loved what he did, and I don't think any of the young guys would have looked at it that way. They would have been like, ooh, they came back, they fought hard, but we won. Chris Paul's like, screw that, man. That should have never happened. That's ridiculous. We got to stop. We can't let that happen anymore. I like the way he acted.
I was super invested in that game last night. I was really watching it intently, and there were a couple of moments where I thought, okay, that's it. It's over. The Suns 20-point lead third quarter, right? Because they got off to that great start to open the third quarter. They open it up to like a 20-point lead. I'm like, okay, good. They're going to blow them out. That's what we wanted. That's what we're going to get. And then the Rockets cut it down to like 5. Then Ayton shows up. He has that brilliant four-minute stretch where he's blocking shots on one end. He's throwing the ball down on the other. And as you say, it extends the Suns' lead back to 15. And at that point, there was like, what, 6 or 7 minutes left in the game? And I'm thinking, okay, that's it. They're going to end up winning the game by 20 or so, just like we had hoped they would all along. For that game, as you say, to get down to a two-point game with whatever it was, a minute 40, a minute 30 left, man, that is it, it just points to, okay, DeAndre Ayton won that game for them last night. Without aggressive Ayton, they don't win, there's no doubt. But there are still so many things that need to be fixed. And I don't know about you, the thing that I noticed watching that game last night is it just seems like they haven't figured out the end game. Booker, Paul, who's calling the shots? Who's in charge? Who's running the show? Who's, you know, it seems like, because they're both alpha males.
I could buy that.
They're both used to having the ball in their hands a lot. And for a lot of the game, you know, other than the first quarter, for a lot of the game, let's be honest, they're not on the floor together a ton, I don't think. I'd have to go back and look at kind of the advanced numbers. I don't think they're on the floor a bunch together. They kind of stagger them a little bit. So when they're on the floor together at the end, do you buy that a little bit, that maybe there's still a little bit of sorting out of roles when it comes to the end of the game?
Yeah, you know, I look at it and I think that they're, you know, everybody's trying to play within a system, but, you know, also share the basketball. You go look at the shots. When they had the 101-86 lead, I mean, it was a lot of, you know, great play by DeAndre Ayton inside. But they did not shoot the ball very well last night, especially from three, like we said earlier. They were terrible from three-point range. So they were only able to overcome that because of DeAndre Ayton. But go look at it from 101-86 on. Mikhail misses a shot. Campaign misses a shot. Booker misses a shot. Chris Paul misses a shot. Mikhail misses a shot. You know what was missing in there? DeAndre Ayton.
What was missing in there? DeAndre Ayton was missing in there.
There was no Ayton. So here he is. He's having the best game of his life. The best game of his life.
Wait, okay. Tell me what stretch that was. Tell me when that was again.
101-86. They're up 101-86.
Okay. Because he subbed out for the game for a while there.
He did sub out
in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
he's
but then
he was
came
tired.
Back in. He came back in and he put the game away with 1:14 left. He rebounded the miss by Paul, got fouled, He rebounded the Woods miss. Booker went to the line. So they had a so part of it was him out of the game, but not all of it. They settled for jump shots. They didn't get to the basket. They didn't get to the free throw line. The only basket they had in that run was a floater by Booker. It was seven. At one point, it was seven straight missed baskets. Straight missed baskets. And a lot of it was just jump shots that they were missing. Take the ball inside, get to the free throw line. That's how you win games at the end. And I don't think that they've figured that out yet. Because, you know, when you've got a lead like that late in the game, just be aggressive, go to the basket, and get to the free throw line. Win the game there.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Ayton taking the ball to the rim. They've got guys who can get to the rim, but as Chris Paul told the guys at Fox Sports Arizona, we just had a lot of empty possessions in the last couple of minutes.
We just have a lot of empty possessions. You know what I mean? That's understood. You know, we got somewhat of a young team that's, you know, not necessarily used to winning games. You know, and you win games in this league down the stretch, so that's on me. Figure it out, because supposed to win this game, you know, and it's not even supposed to be that close.
He keeps going back to that. We're supposed to win this.
Supposed
game.
To win this game. And it's not even supposed to be that close. Pissed.
And look. Let's call it like it is too. There was one possession where Chris Paul. I mean, of all those bad shots they took, Chris Paul took one of the worst ones of them, and that was the missed shot that Ayton was fortunate enough to clean up on the offensive glass and get the two free throws that you were talking about earlier. That was a huge play for Ayton. It came off really bad possession for Chris Paul, where he just took sort of an awkward shot where he didn't have a really good look. He was guarded pretty well, but it feels like the flow in these games where at the end, you know, you expect them to win, whether it was that Detroit game, that Memphis game, sort of the same thing, even last night that they were fortunate enough to win. They just haven't found the right flow to their offense late in these games to kind of allow them to navigate that. You talk about settling for jump shots. If I remember right, I don't have the play-by-play in front of me. Devin Booker settled for a couple jump shots in there. There were, you know, real quick three-pointers that were settled for in there. I think Chris Paul will settle that all down eventually, but it's really obvious there's still a lot of work to be done. I'm just glad to hear Chris Paul not fall into the trap of, yeah, great win, we're so excited, happy for. No, he's more, better, improvement. That's not good enough, and I'm glad to hear Chris Paul say that's not good enough.
What was the game they went to overtime and lost? Was that Detroit?
Yes, that was Detroit.
Okay, Booker had a chance to win it and missed the shot at the end. I think you're on to something here. I think at the end of games, I don't feel like there is one guy that, you know, that Monty's like, okay, this is the guy I want to close out the game. Because it's all different guys. Mikhail took two shots. Booker took two shots. Paul took a shot. Campaign missed a shot. It wasn't like, hey, this is my closer. You know, they don't have a closer right now. And, you know, even at the end, even when DA got back in, Paul took a shot. Booker took a shot. Like, I don't know if it's just if they've settled on this is the guy that we want the ball to, you know, the ball in his hands right in the last couple of minutes to close this thing out.
And look, I've got, this is just an observation. I'm sure somebody out there will find some numbers that will point out that I'm wrong. And if that's the case, then so be it. This is just a perceptual kind of observation here. But I wonder, okay, think about it. Devin Booker, Gambo, for the longest time, he was the man on this team because he was the only man on this team, right? That there was nobody else you would even remotely want taking your shots in the last 3 or 4 minutes of a win that you're trying to preserve. Well, now he's got a running mate in Chris Paul, and Chris Paul's pretty good. He's made a really nice career of being that guy too. And I'm thinking to myself that after, what have they played, 13 games now? That after 13 games, they still quite haven't figured out among these two guys who are used to being the guy at the end of a game, that they haven't quite figured out who the guy is supposed to be. And it just seems very awkward watching them trying to figure it out at the end of some of these games. It just hasn't gone real well.
Yeah, I think it'll fit. We talked about this yesterday. How long is it going to take for this team to start gelling and have that figured out? Monty's got to handle that. But I think 20 games, I think by 20 games, they'll have a better understanding of how they want to play and what their identity is. What is the identity of this team? You know, for a good portion, it's three-point shooting. They live and die by the three. And Now it's, you know, is it pound the ball inside to DeAndre? The Utah game was defense. Great defense. That's all right. What's your identity? You know, what is the identity of this basketball team? And Chris Paul desperately wants to make sure that the identity is, hey, we got a 15-point lead late in the game. That we got to close that out.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Larry Scott is out as the commissioner of the Pac-12. There are two names in particular that are being mentioned as replacements, and both of them have ties to Arizona. And we'll tell you who they are next on the Burns and Gambo show. One Pac-12 administrator, quote, "This is not a time for unconventional strategy. This hire is much more about the fundamentals. We should only consider candidates who are highly respected and accomplished Power 5 athletic directors or television media executives," close quote. That was an anonymous Pac-12 administrator talking about who should be next to lead the Pac-12. Now that Larry Scott has been informed that he'll be let go, and his tenure is going to end in June, and they will start what could be a very long process to figure out who the next person is going to be. Gambo, I even read where it might take them 9 months just to find who the person is going to be, and then that person would have another like year and a half to get accustomed to the job before negotiating the next media rights. This is a long process this organization is going through.
Yeah, but they got to get it right. So I'm glad they have the time to do it. I mean, you've got, you know, he's going to hang around till June, you know, unfortunately. And then you've got to make sure that you get this right. The negotiations for the TV rights is coming up. So you've got to have somebody that can get you a great TV deal and help fix all the issues that there are in the Pac-12.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of issues right now.
Didn't mean to cut you off. Here's our guy Wilner, who wrote today, why do it now? Why not delay until the spring or the early summer? And he said, because every month matters, and the presidents recognize that. They need time for the search, which could take 6 or 9 months. The new commissioner will need time to settle in and craft a strategy before the media rights negotiations begin in 2 years from now. That's why they made this announcement about Larry Scott now. And let's be honest, they knew Larry Scott wasn't a very popular figure among fans in their conference. So, who is next? Well, there are three names that keep popping up over and over and over again. And Gambo and I noticed the same thing. Two of the three names, huge Arizona ties. Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, and Greg Byrne, the athletic director at Alabama. Both Arizona guys.
Yeah, I was reading a story talked about Greg Byrne and saying, you know, the fallout with the, you know, being at Arizona and the whole Rich Rod saga, could that work against them? You know, Gene Smith, I knew him pretty well. I think you did too. Real class guy. I mean, played football at Notre Dame, was good athletic director here, and then, you know, obviously got the job at Ohio State. You know, I mean, that could be a home run hire right there. Oliver Luck, I don't know much about him. I know he was in charge of that XFL for a little while, and you know, he's a former quarterback in the NFL. And there's a lot of other names. They even mentioned Ray Anderson. You know, his name is mentioned in names to watch. Gloria Navarez, Burke Magnus, Dan Radakovich, Ray Anderson. I don't know a lot of these people. Damani Leach, Martin Jarmond, as a dark horse, along with Condoleezza Rice. You know, the names that I'm familiar with are Greg Byrne and Gene Smith. I mean, I think Gene Smith would be really good. But you got to get this right. And I think it's important. I mean, if you go Gene Smith, I mean, my reasoning to as why I would really give him a strong look is, man, just the football ties. I mean, just the football. I mean, he's a football guy. So, you know, if he can help get this football, Pac-12 football, back to being competitive again, you know, and that might be something that he can really help with, because he's got such, you know, he's at Ohio State. That's a dominant program in football every single year. He was a football player at Notre Dame. He makes a lot of sense to try to help in that aspect.
I think he and Greg Byrne are almost identical candidates in terms of, I mean, look at where both are coming from. They are both the athletic directors, and have been for a while, of two of the premier football programs. And I can hear some people right now already, well, does it have to always be about football? In many ways, yes, it does. I mean, I hate to be so narrow-minded, but if you're talking about the broad success of a conference, a lot of the times that broad success starts with the foundation of being good in football, because it funds everything else, right? I mean, it writes the checks. It signs the checks for everything else. So, yes, it's not just about one sport, but you have to be good and produce revenue in that sport to fund everything else. So, yes, that's a big part of it. And that's why, to me, Byrne and Gene Smith both make so much sense. One is the AD of Ala-freaking-Bama, and the other is the AD of Ohio State, two programs that understand how to maximize revenue at football, that understand the importance of football, that understand kind of the culture of how that defines an athletic department, two guys who certainly know how the business of college sports works, who certainly have contacts both, you know, in terms of normal channels, back channels, off-the-record conversations, things that need to get done, and two very respected guys, and Byrne, of course, former U of A AD, Gene Smith, the former ASU AD. There's experience. They know the conference. They have an understanding of how it works, having spent their time here. I think both of those guys would be a great, great hire as the next commissioner for the
Pac-12. Pete Dammel said the early read on candidates to replace Scott is that they need direct college experience, football savvy, media experience, and a relationship builder. That's all of those are Gene Smith to me.
Yep.
Think about those. Direct college experience, football savvy, media experience, and a relationship builder. Now, would Gene Smith want to leave Ohio State, leave Columbus to take on this role? I don't know. I mean, he's been the athletic director of Ohio State since 2005.
Was that when he left ASU? Was 2005? Jeez.
Yeah, he's been here for a long time. He's been here for 15 years ago.
My gosh, that was 15 years ago. Yeah, Gene was. We all knew Gene when he was here. I mean, for those of us who have been in the business long enough, Gene was a very, very easy person to talk to. Very accommodating. Yeah,
he was great.
Yeah, I didn't know Greg Byrne all that much when he was down at U of A, but I mean, I think he'd be a tremendous hire as well. I mean, he's the athletic director of Alabama. I mean, that's a very weighty position, you know.
Ohio State's got 37 varsity sports, more than any other school in the country. Nobody has more varsity sports than Gene Smith, so he's, you know, he knows all about that. Then, you know, when you look at athletic directors that are involved in stuff, I mean, he sits on the NCAA committees. He's been involved with the college football playoffs. Like, you know, he's got his hands in a lot of different things. He served on the NCAA Management Council, the NCAA Committee on Infractions, the Rose Bowl Management Committee, the NCAA Rules Committee. He was on the Division I Basketball Committee. I mean, he was chair of that committee. He's perfect. Like, if you could get him to leave Columbus... And I don't know if he would. I mean, he's been, you know, sometimes, you know, I guess, I mean, how old is he? Because that's the other thing. Now, this is a step up, right, to be in charge of an entire conference. But, hey, man, to leave, he's 61 years old. This would be a good time to do it for him. If he figures I've done everything I could at Ohio State, let me get to the warm weather. I'll go live in California. I'll go live in the warm weather instead of the cold weather. And it's possible you might be able to convince him to do it.
And for what it's worth, Greg Byrne is 49 years old. So, you know, and not that Gene Smith is old, but Byrne is obviously a little bit younger. Now, in this article that you and I both saw on The Athletic with the potential replacements, you mentioned some of the names to watch, and I don't want to gloss over it because it was very interesting that Ray Anderson was mentioned as prominently as he was. Gloria Navarez is the commissioner of the West Coast Conference. She worked in the Pac-12 for 8 or 9 years. Burke Magnus, I don't expect anybody to know this name, and I don't either. It's just who he is that's interesting. He works for ESPN. He's the executive vice president of programming and scheduling, and in the athletics words, might just be the most influential person in college athletics who technically doesn't work in college athletics. He's a guy who... If he wants to schedule a season opening game between Alabama and USC, he's the guy who does it. He's the guy who calls up those two ADs and says, hey, I got the stadium in Dallas. It's all booked. USC, Alabama, who says no? We're going to put it on ESPN. We're going to have Chris and Kirk there, and we're going to call the game, and it's going to get huge numbers. Who says no? That's the kind of power he has. It's just, do you just want to focus on the media rights, or is that there more you want to consider? And then there's Ray Anderson. The other guy was the Clemson AD, Radivakovich, which the Clemson AD. But Ray Anderson, he interviewed for the ACC commissioner's job in the fall, according to the story. but they expressed concern about how he's handled the Bobby Hurley situation with the donor and the alleged allegations and the, you know, about how, what kind of scrutiny he might come under for that. But it is interesting to see the AD for ASU so prominently mentioned in this story.
The Magnus thing is interesting, right? I mean, do they need to find a way to get a TV mind in charge of the conference? Like you said, I mean, he's, what, second or third in command at ESPN? So, you know, because they negotiate, the money's everything, right? I mean, what are they getting? They're raking in about, what, $30-something million a year while these other conferences are making a lot more than them, right, especially the SEC and the Big Ten?
$31 or $32 million a year, and I think the Big Ten is getting like $51 and the SEC's getting like $44, $45 million a year. Yeah.
So, you know, you want – now, you're not gonna expect to get the same money as the SEC or the Big Ten. But you got to close the gap a little bit, right? I mean, you got to find a way to close that gap a little bit and have a product that is worth selling. A TV guy might be able to get you the best deal, but is he best for the conference?
Right.
You know, I don't know about. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know enough about him. I know he was in the running for the ACC commissioner, so obviously he has some interest in that. If he was in the running for the ACC job, he didn't get it. So you take a look at him, you interview all these people, you pick everybody's brain, you see who the best guy is. But you can't get this wrong. I mean, the Pac-12, you know, a lot of people think that it's only a Power Four right now, that the Pac-12 is not one of the Power Five conferences, that it's there's four power conferences, and the Pac-12 is not the fifth one, that they're kind of below everybody. And you can't let that continue to slide, because then it'll become a reality. Like, if that trend continues, you know, before we know it, nobody's going to consider the Pac-12 a top conference anymore.
Right. When we come back, after missing the playoffs this season, we all are assuming that next year it's playoffs or bust for the Arizona Cardinals. One longtime NFL football writer says it's going to bust and it's not going to happen. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The headline. Predicting the 2021 NFL playoff bracket. 14 teams that will make next season's field, including the Bucs, Packers, and Jags. All right. Intrigued. I click. So did Gambo. He's actually the one who sent this story to me. I clicked on the link.
Wanted to see where they have the Cardinals ranked.
I scroll past the AFC. We'll get to them in a minute. This is Bill Barnwell who wrote this for ESPN, and he admits it's kind of flawed. Where's the quarterback carousel going to stop? Where's Deshaun Watson going to be? There's a million things that can change about the lead. But just based off of what we know about schedules and rosters, how they stand now, who does he think will be in the playoff field next year? Get to the NFC. Top seed, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Number two, Green Bay Packers. Number three, Dallas Cowboys. Somebody has to win the NFC East after all, he writes. Number four, San Francisco 49ers. Number five, Seattle Seahawks.
Well, three teams from the NFC West.
Oh, yeah. Number six, Atlanta Falcons. Number seven,
what?
LA Rams.
Yeah, three teams from the NFC West.
Three teams from the NFC West. None of them are the Arizona Cardinals. The Falcons in as a wild card. And then, injury to insult, in the teams that will miss the playoffs, Gambo, he doesn't even list the Cardinals there.
Wow.
He's Cardinal got the hater. Saints, Washington football team, and the Chicago Bears. I'm like, not even a mention of the Cardinals in this? Oh, my God.
Man. Couple things about these type of stories, right? Barnwell does a good job, right, Bill Barnwell? But couple things. Man, it's January 21st. I don't know who the Cardinals are drafting. I don't know who they're trading for. I don't know who they're signing as a free agent. I don't know who they're losing as a free agent. Same with all these other teams. I mean, you don't know. The teams are going to look different, okay? I mean, there's going to be seven new draft picks. That's seven new players on the team. They're going to sign, you know, four or five free agents. You're 12, you know, so now you're at 11, 12 players on the team. Get some undrafted guys, a trade or two. I mean, you're talking about 15, 16 new players on the team. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know who the number two wide receiver is going to be. I don't know who the running back's going to be. I don't know who the pass rusher is going to be. I don't know if Chandler Jones comes back healthy. So it's really difficult to do this in January. But he's doing it anyway. And he comes up with, you know, these formulas and stuff like that. Like, if you look at Atlanta, Like, that's the one I didn't care about the rest of them. The Falcons? Like, okay.
That's the one that got you upset? That's the,
yeah.
That the Falcons were mentioned?
The Falcons, yeah. So he's kind of like, you know, the 4-12 Falcons with 3.6 wins below their Pythagorean expectation, which is the biggest under... Huh?
Pythagorean.
Yeah, that. Which is the biggest under... What? Looks like a Pythagorean expectation, which is the biggest underperformance we've seen in the past 20 years. He's using this term, whatever you said it was, the word is, to kind of like...
Gina Ficarra didn't teach you about the Pythagorean theorem?
I don't even know what that is, dude. Like
in geometry? Like, no?
No, I never did.
Plus
I didn't
B
do
squared
algebra.
Equals C squared? No? Yeah, okay.
No, I didn't do anything with numbers and letters I didn't do. I told you, I never got to algebra. Never.
Okay.
So... And then he's like, the closest comparables are the 2001 Chargers, who went from 5-11 to 88, and the 2017 Browns. So he's using this theory to kind of like say that the Falcons are going to be better. I mean, all right, these theories to do it. Okay.
Yeah, it tries to predict luck. You know, as crazy as that sounds, and that in his estimation, Atlanta was a very unlucky team in 2020, and they'll just that'll kind of adjust to the mean in 2021, and they'll win more games because they'll just have better luck next year. We'll see. I the Falcons, okay, whatever. Three NFC West teams, whatever. Teams that will miss the playoffs, you've got the Saints, you've got Washington, and you've got the Bears. You don't even mention the Cardinals there? I mean, that suggests that, you know, okay, this is 7 + 3. This is 10 teams in the NFC. That he's suggesting that the Cardinals aren't one of the 10 best teams in the NFC, that scares the crap out of me. You know, that's because
I wouldn't get too concerned with it, man.
No, I mean, okay, you're right.
I wouldn't.
You're
not
right.
Now.
You're right.
Not now.
You're right. That's a little, as we like to say on the Burns and Gambo show, that's a little bit of hyperbole. It doesn't scare the crap out of me. But that is sort of, because it is, if they're really that far off, if this is even close to reality when it's not January 21st, but when it's November 21st or December 21st, if they're that far off from being a playoff team, oh my goodness, there's going to be some changes with that organization. There better be some changes with that
organization.
Yeah. I mean, across the board.
Yeah.
If they're not even one of the 10 best teams in the NFC, now again, you are so right in that this is... It's a prediction that's so far out and is based on so little actual information that it's hard to look at it and go, oh, that's how it's going to be. There you go. Barnwell called his shot back on January 21st. You're absolutely right. I just look at it and I think ahead, you know, 11 months from now, 10 months from now, and think, man, if he's close, there's that organization's got to, from top to bottom, they got to make changes from top to bottom if that's how it is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there will be. I mean, I think we would all be on board with it. I mean, if this team finishes, you know, if they don't take that jump this year, you've got a lot of questions. First of all, why? Well, you know, what happened? Why did they not make the jump? And you've got to look at the roster, and you've got to start, you know, at the top. And Michael Bidwell's going to have to evaluate everybody from Steve Keim to Cliff Kingsbury to the coaching staff to the players and determine, okay, why? You know, why 3 years in, why do we not make that jump? You know, we went from 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins. We don't want to take a step backwards. Now, you know, if they go 8-8 and they don't make the playoffs, but they're very competitive, could they, you know, and they lose a couple of heartbreakers or they suffer some serious injuries? You know, that could factor into decisions. I think it could.
Sure.
But overall, I mean, if everything is on equal footing and they just don't play very well or have a good year, the schedule's tougher, and they end up winning 6 or 7 games, you might sit there and say, okay, how, you know, is Cliff capable of taking this team to the next level? Is Cliff capable of doing that? And then you look at the roster and you find out, okay, why is this roster, you know, 3 years of building this roster and the image that Cliff wants, why isn't the team getting to the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't think that's a – look, you said it. There are catastrophic things that can happen that can change our expectations. And nobody wants to say them out loud because, you know, whether you're superstitious or not, but we all know what they are. And if those things happen, then obviously everything changes. But you go from 3 to 5 to 8, and I know there's soft spots in the wide receiver room and questions at the cornerback spot, and I get all of that. But there is a very real expectation of playoffs next year. And if they don't get there, yep, we're going to be looking at the whole thing top to bottom and wonder what went wrong. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Pac-12 is undergoing a major change with a change of commissioner. With Larry Scott out, what's next for the conference? We'll ask Pac-12 insider John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News. He joins us next on the Burns and Gambo show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, scheduled to be joined by John Wilner, Pac-12 insider from the San Jose Mercury News. We are working on getting him on the phone right now. Of course, Wilner, along with many others, but John Wilner, one of our favorite Pac-12 insiders, who is all over this Larry Scott story, as he has been informed. It was being reported as a mutual decision, but I don't know if anybody really believes that, that Larry Scott is out as commissioner of the Pac-12. I don't think anybody really believes that, Gambo, but that is how it's being spun to us, that Larry Scott.
I think when you're making mutual. $5 million a year and then you decide not to come back for your job, I don't think it's a mutual decision.
Right, exactly, right? Like, yeah. I'm going to mutually agree to not get paid $5 million a year to do this. I really don't think that's
work. I just really don't want to do this anymore, but you're making $5 million a year. Yeah, I just don't really feel like I want to do this. Yeah, no, that's – yeah, no, they decided to do away with Larry Scott because the Pac-12 is a mess.
Yeah, it's when you start talking about why it's a mess, it's such a mess, it's hard to even know – where to start. I mean, from a football standpoint, it's a mess. It's not competitive. From a media rights standpoint, it's a mess. You can't watch any of their games. And from a financial standpoint, it's a mess because they're not making nearly as much revenue as the other conferences are. I mean, there's so much.
And isn't that the most important?
The money.
I mean, it's just the money allows you to do everything that you need to do, okay? The money allows you to Yeah, it's a facilities thing. You know, you got to have the best weight room. You got to have the best stadium and the venues and the practice facility. Everything's got to be top notch. These kids, man, you know, this needs to be a 5-star resort you're going to, not a 3-star resort. You go to a 3-star resort, then you go to a 5-star resort. You know, Ohio State and, you know, Alabama, LSU, you know, the top programs, 5-star resorts. You've got to keep up with the Joneses. You need the money to do that. You want to carry all these sports and have great facilities? Well, then you need that money. So ultimately, there's a lot of things that Larry Scott did wrong, but the money is the biggest factor. They need this next television contract to bring a heck of a lot more money to get them more in line with where they should be. I'm not saying they need to be the Big Ten of the SEC because they're not going to. The fan bases aren't going to allow that. But they need to make more money in their next TV deal.
Yeah, they do, and a lot of that it's they're all kind of interconnected, right? A better media rights deal will get you more money. A better football program, better football programs will get you more money. It's all kind of interconnected, and it's all kind of interwoven with each other. And what's funny about it is, I remember now, for whatever reason, his name is escaping me. The gentleman who used to be the commissioner of the Pac-12 before Larry Scott, was it?
Tom Hanson.
Tom Hanson. That's
yeah,
who
I couldn't get his name out either. Tom Hanson.
I was stuck on that for a minute, and I remember even then when Larry Scott replaced him, it was thank goodness that, I mean, nothing against Tom, but it was time for some fresh ideas. It was time for a new coat of paint. It was time for a fresh way of looking, and Larry Scott was seen as that by many, and he came in, and he was initially hailed as, okay, here he is. He's going to revolutionize this thing, and he's going to change everything. And for a while there, he did. I think the one thing that he could never answer for, and no matter how – I mean, to think that he'd been on the job for 10 years or however long it was, and that he never fixed this – the availability of the Pac-12 network across every single platform it could be on. You know, I mean, it just was a problem. It's like a house that you've got, and there's that one thing that you just keep putting off fixing. I'm gonna fix that one of these days. I'm gonna get around to that one of these days. And Larry Scott never got around to fixing the Pac-12 network thing. He never did. And Well, we joke about it all the time, and we laughed about, you know, what cable systems it is on and what cable systems it isn't on. At the end of the day, not maximizing your reach as a conference, that was a problem that desperately needed to be solved, and Larry Scott never solved it. He never solved it.
No, it's so many different things that you look at. And look, were there good things? I mean, expanding. Look, remember that whole power play with trying with the Big 12 when it looked like the Big 12 was on the verge of collapse and the Pac-12 was going to take Texas and Oklahoma? And you would, like, oh, my, can you imagine if they were able to pull that off? I mean, you know, that would have been, like, everything negative, $750,000 suite, okay, take it. You know, whatever it is. Hey, you're accelerating your bonus, take it. I mean, if you would have brought Texas and Oklahoma here to this conference, that, I mean, that would have been just so big. You know, the Pac-12, I mean, the TV money would have been outrageous. You would have competed. You would have had teams in the playoffs all the time. It would have really pushed football to another level, you know, with those programs. It didn't work. They ended up with Colorado and Utah. That was okay. I mean, they expanded. It was okay. It wasn't a negative. But that was probably the best thing he did. Oh, he put the basketball tournament in Vegas. I mean, okay. That's okay. I mean, it's not like – everybody points to stuff that he did. Oh, this is the good things he did. It wasn't that great.
It was good,
but it wasn't that great.
No, and you know what? The thing about it is that I really enjoyed the programming on the Pac-12 Network. I you know, they could have done a better job with it, sure, and it wasn't available in every home that it could have been. But the stuff that was on there was good. I enjoyed it. I liked their broadcasts. I liked the people they employed as part of those broadcasts. I thought they all did a really good job, and I hope to see a lot of those voices and a lot of those faces continue with the coverage of the Pac-12 in whatever form it takes. But, yeah, you're right. When your best things are the near expansion, and I've never been to the basketball tournament in Vegas. I hear that is a lot of fun, and it's a very well-run event. I've never been there, but I've heard nothing but good things about
it. It's a blast.
You're right. It is. You've been there, Sarah. You've obviously been there a few times,
as a fan, working it, yeah.
Yeah,
was it that hard to put that together? Was it that hard of a decision? Hey, let's have the basketball tournament in Vegas. That wasn't that hard of a decision.
No, but you still have to execute it.
Yeah,
you still have to execute it and make it a desirable place to be. And from what I've heard from people who have been there is that it was a lot of fun, and it still is. It's a fun place to. In fact, one of my the same best friend of mine who I was telling you earlier about, who was so happy that Larry Scott got let go, he was actually in Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament when the pandemic hit. He was there for the Pac-12 tournament. That's how big of a fan he is of ASU and the Pac-12 in general. He was there when everything got shut down, and he's like, what do I do now? How do I get home? What do we do when the pandemic has shut everything down in the middle of March? He wasn't sure. But that's the other thing to consider too. You talk about expansion. There are a lot of people who think that the next commissioner of the Pac-12 is going to have to be ready for that next round of expansion. And will the Pac-12 expand, or will other conferences look to take Pac-12 teams away? And we talked about that a couple of months ago,
yes,
right?
Like it's, all it takes is the one domino to fall, and that's USC. USC says, you know what? This is ridiculous. We should be making more money. You know, we're USC, for goodness sakes. And we shouldn't be getting $30 million a year. All it takes is USC. And if USC decides they don't want to be, forget about anybody else. That's the domino. Now, if USC leaves, then the whole thing's in trouble, right? I mean, that's that you take that one domino out, and then everything else is going to fall. It's going to be hard to recover from that if they lose USC. So that's the most, you know, if you come in, that's the most important thing. What do I need to do to appease USC? Not Arizona or Arizona State or Utah or Colorado. USC, wouldn't you agree?
I would totally agree. I mean, I think Oregon, to a certain extent, is still a player. Not as prominent as USC, but still very much a player. Washington, I think, is still a player. Not as prominent. I think those three are sort of your premier kind of flag-bearing programs that you have to be worried that somebody is going to come and get, that somebody's going to come and take away from you. But, yeah, USC's the biggie, and because of the market, the TV market that it's in. And, look, conference expansion for now is kind of chilled, but there are many who believe that we are a year or two away from another massive round of – there are some who believe, Gambo, that the Power Five is eventually going to succeed itself from the rest of the NCAA and form their own kind of organization. That's been out there for a couple of years now. Whoever the next conference commissioner is has to make sure the Pac-12 is part of that and doesn't get left behind. You know, you joked earlier that some people think it's the Power Four, not the Power Five. Well, if the Power Five ever decides to divorce itself from the NCAA, you better have a commissioner in place to make sure you're invited to that party. You don't want to not be invited to that party if you're the Pac-12. So that's something else this new person is going to have to do. Make sure the league is involved in something like that.
Yeah, you know, listen, there's a lot of good things, right? I mean, you know, the sunshine, you bring UCLA and USC with you, but man, it's, you know, if some of these, you know, you mentioned Oregon, USC, you know, you're watching this very closely because, you know, you've got to make sure that you are in line money-wise with these others. I mean, you have to. You have to find a way to make more money to be competitive. So I think that's what you keep your eye on first and foremost is that if they're able to salvage it and they do become a Power Five somewhere, I think they would take the Pac-12 because of, I mean, there are prominent programs here in football and basketball, even though they're not winning championships right now. There is history, there is tradition. Yeah. It gives you the West Coast time zone. You know, which you wouldn't have without it. So I do think that they would get in there. But again, my concern would be if there is expansion and anybody else wants to, you know, take some of the power teams out of the Pac-12, I think it could happen.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Suns got a much-needed win last night, and it was on the back of DeAndre Ayton. And we don't get to say that every day, so we're going to enjoy it next on the Burns and Gambo show.